It is definitely winter weather across the United States as we near the end of February 2019. We're going to tell some winter stories and talk about something called the Grand Solar Minimum, which is fast approaching from 2020 to about 2030, and we're going to talk about it in this podcast, Podcast 810, the Bob Davis Podcast. You better batten down the hatches. One of the things we're going to talk about in this podcast are winter stories and the solar minimum and whether that means colder and colder weather. And you know what it made me think about? It made me think, boy, it would be great to have a finished basement with a huge either wood stove or fireplace so that when it was really, really cold, I could come down here and light the fire and just bask in the warmth. It doesn't matter what your dream is. If you're looking for a home office to build so that you can hunker down and work from home, or if you're looking for, you know, kind of a playroom for the kids, if you're looking to build a new deck for the very short summer season in Minnesota, if you are looking to make a man cave out of the garage, maybe put a wood stove in a garage or a heating system in a garage so you can go out there and hang out to watch Vikings games, whatever, I want to recommend Whitetail Builders in Andover, Minnesota, because these guys are getting great referrals and great reviews from customers who are asking Whitetail to build their dreams. Because when you're thinking about building your dream, you need a builder who's going to be by your side from start to finish so your expectations are met. Whitetail Builders is a company that believes that the process is just as important as the end result. So they're with their customers all the way from start to finish. They are online at WhitetailBuildersInc.com, or you can go to the BobDavisPodcast.com and click on the Whitetail banner, which has some pictures of their work, but their website has a ton more. There is a contact page at WhitetailBuildersInc.com, and you can leave your name and number and tell Whitetail your dreams, or you can call Randy Graybaugh at 612-282-8801. That's 612-282-8801. Whitetail is focused on the detail. I will tell you, people rave about Randy, and I think you're going to love the results. Good luck in your dream building with Whitetail Builders, helping you construct your dreams. Check them out online at WhitetailBuildersInc.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. All right, this is going to be an easy talker because in my world, at the time I'm recording this podcast, we're heading towards the weekend, and I just want to get it done. But I also am really excited to talk about this because I think I'm going to tell you, this is going to end up being a controversial podcast. It's going to end up being a controversial subject that you're going to be hearing a lot about, and that is the Grand Solar Minimum. There's a lot being written about it now suddenly, articles about the effect of a Grand Solar Minimum on the economy and agriculture, an imminent mini ice age, articles about how a Grand Solar Minimum would affect society, lots and lots and lots of stuff. There's a bunch of YouTube channels already about it. We're going to talk about that. Here's an article from The Guardian. Is another Grand Solar Minimum imminent? And then you get into the controversy because the global warming or climate change theorists get really upset. And a lot of the source about a Grand Solar Minimum is coming from Valentina Sarkova, a scientist who presented her climate and the solar magnetic field hypothesis at a Global Warming Policy Foundation conference in October of 2018. And the information that she presented, well, it says it's peer-reviewed, which I don't think makes that much of a difference. Actually, there's a lot of controversy about that. And then on top of all this, there's a ton of stuff on YouTube, and you know that I love YouTube. YouTube is my go-to source for really important information about this, the effect of the impending solar minimum and the magnetic field. So that's kind of the factual base or the opinion base or whatever you want to call it for this podcast. But I'll tell you where all this started. It started because I was on the phone with my mom, who is 96 years old. And we were just talking about the weather. We were talking about the weather in Virginia, and she was talking about how it's going to be cold down there and it's raining. And I'm like, you have no idea what cold is. And so as a typical Minnesotan or upper Midwesterner, I was raised in Chicago and have lived in Minnesota a lot longer than I lived in Chicago. And the only time that I didn't live in the Midwest was a period of time, probably about 10 years, when I lived and worked out on the East Coast, Baltimore and Washington and Richmond, and then later came back and worked in New York for a couple of years. So I've spent a lot of my life way up here in the northern reaches of the United States, certainly not as far north as some of the more hardy Michiganders up in the United, up in the UP, the Upper Peninsula, or northern Minnesota, or people on that, you know, way northern Canadian border edge in North Dakota and Montana. We have these really cold winters. Now, sometimes we get a break. This year, as you know, if you live in, you're listening to me in Minneapolis and St. Paul area, we got a little bit of a break. We got some warm temperatures that lasted pretty much from just before Christmas all the way up through the new year. And it was a little weird. I have often talked about how December 25th, it starts to get cold, and then it goes into a deep freeze from January till early March. And this year, it stayed warm, you know, really unseasonably warm weather in January. And then we hit the deep freeze in late January, early February, and we've also gotten a ton of snow. So I took this picture of my car out in the driveway because I wanted to send it to my friend down in Arizona that showed these enormous piles of snow that we all have. And I have, well, you know, shoveling has been really physically draining for me this year. I mean, I don't have a snowblower. I actually prefer to shovel the driveway and the walk because I can get it perfect. And I this is what I've actually gotten off on in terms of winter in Minnesota this year, is making sure the edges of my driveway are perfectly straight and it's perfectly shoveled. And I have a whole system for shoveling it. I'm physically exhausted from doing it. Had to do it this morning at 5 o'clock. I had to get up at 5 o'clock because I had a meeting at about 7:30. So I got up at 5 a.m. this morning. It is almost 10 o'clock now p.m. Yes, I took a nap today and shoveled the driveway before I went to work. Now, we didn't have much snow. We're going to get snow again Saturday. So we've been getting regularly 3 or 4 inches of snow. And I took this picture of the car in the driveway. And it just reminded me of when I was a kid in my first couple of years of high school. And I would walk in the morning. I would walk down to my best friend's house, and this is usually in January and February, or maybe even right after Christmas when it was really dark. And so I remember leaving the house, and it was still dark at five. Well, I guess I would leave the house at about 6:30, and it must have been earlier in the year because it was still dark. And I would walk down to Steve's house, and we would wait for his mom because she worked at the high school. She was a librarian, and she would take us to school so we didn't have to wait at the bus stop, which got pretty cold. And the thing that triggered all that was all this conversation we have here in Minnesota with the closing of the schools every time it gets cold or every time there's 3 or 4 inches of snow on the ground. I don't want to get into that because that's one of those things that's like, you know, when I was a kid, we walked 20 miles to school in the snow and it didn't. Well, we got a ride from, you know, the librarian to school but I remember those winters as lasting almost forever. And we did not go anywhere. We didn't have the means to take these vacations. Once in a while, we'd drive to Florida. And that was the extent of our, you know, going to a warm place. And we went to Florida one winter, and I remember it was maybe 65 degrees down there. And, you know, you're a kid, and you don't think anything of it, but you know, we were in Florida and we went to the beach but we were cold the whole time because it was in the 60s. And, you know, this is the genesis of the whole thing that I always say, you got to go to Cabo. You got to go someplace equatorial because you got to get that cold out of your bones. I've done podcasts about it. It's really hard to keep going. You know, when you're living in a really cold environment for any length of time, you have to eat a lot. You have to sleep. You have to be aware that there's going to be a physical drag, and you want to get outside because you want to acclimate yourself to the cold. And that's one of the reasons that I shovel, because it lets me get outside and be part of the weather. But it definitely takes its toll. All right. So The stories that I remember of winter are these huge snowdrifts. I remember a lot more snow when I was growing up. And so when I grew up, I'm still trying to figure out if it was in a solar minimum or there was a solar minimum. Where's my little chart of solar minimums? I want to do this because I think it's really important because we're going to start. So what is a solar minimum? A solar minimum is nothing more than the down end of the solar cycle where the sun does not have any sunspots. It's called a solar minimum. And a couple of things about the solar minimum that I've learned doing some research for this podcast is, and I was surprised to learn this. So when the sun is at its minimum, the magnetic field drops down into the center of the sun, and the magnetic field and its effects are actually stronger on the Earth than they are at a solar maximum. So there have been, we're now at sun cycle 25 or 26. That's what we're heading into. And it includes, I believe, both the low end and the high end. But there are also grand minimums that occur. We're just heading into sun cycle 25, right? And if you look at it on a chart, I'm going to put links to all this stuff up. If you look at it on a chart, you know, you can see the high of sun cycle 23. Then you see solar cycle 24, which is considerably lower in terms of cycle sunspot number progression than 23. So at the high point, 23 was much higher than 24. 23 was back at the beginning of the 2000s. We're heading into 25, which there's a minimum, and then it starts to climb up, and we'll see the solar activity. So a couple of things, very important. It's very hard to predict sun behavior during these cycles, and some of the stuff you're going to read would suggest that you can predict the sun's behavior during a sun cycle. So what we've seen is lower activity during sun cycle 24 than we saw during 23, but that does not mean that 25 that 25 is going to be lower than 23. So that's a really important thing to point out. So the list of solar cycles, sometimes called sunspot cycles, has been tracked since 1755, and it follows the original numbering proposed by Rudolf Wolf in the mid-19th century. So this list, I don't need to really tell you too much about it because it's not that big of a deal, but solar cycle 1 was in 1755 and so on. So we are in solar cycle 24 right now. And we're heading into solar cycle 25. That's the idea of what's going on. Now, I am not a scientist. I don't follow this closely. What I follow are the hand-wringing and highly emotional predictions about the activity of these cycles. And so you're starting to see a proliferation of YouTube channels about this because NASA's starting to talk about it, and that's important. So I go back and I look at the sun cycles that were important. Solar cycle 20, 1964. Solar cycle 21, 1976. Solar cycle 22, 1986. So around those periods, you would have had minimums and maximums. And so try to remember back to those winters. We had a pretty intense winter in Minnesota in 1986. We had a few pretty intense winters in the 1960s in Chicago and the 1970s. If you're not up on it, you want to read a little bit about the cycles. And it's very difficult to figure out from these charts when a particular thing may or may not have happened. So you would have to take on one column the precipitation and the cold winters and so forth and so on, and then compare it to the sun cycles. That's one of the reasons it's difficult to compare weather data to sun cycles. I personally believe that the sun has more to do with Earth climate than probably anything else. That's controversial because the global warming theory people and the climate change theory people say this is because of greenhouse gases, and that even if we have a solar minimum, its effects will be minimized because of global warming. The implication is that if we have a really significant, ice age level solar minimum, than like we had during the Little Ice Age back in the 1600s when the Thames River in London froze over and people had these really cold winters, 1645 and 1715, although it continued for probably centuries longer, this Little Ice Age. People don't realize that volcanic eruptions, human activities have also contributed to quote-unquote cool temperatures. What I find interesting is that it used to be global warming, now it's climate change, and it seems to be going in the opposite direction from warming. And so my question is, could the sun activity have an effect on it? And in a solar minimum, which is going to kick in here between 2020 and 2030, especially if it is a super solar minimum or a grand solar minimum, and we know that there is some, we believe, I shouldn't say we because I don't know, but scientists and people who follow this believe that there is a cycle. There are cycles in progress with the sun. And the idea would be that during maximums, the Earth is warmer, and during the minimums, the Earth is cooler. That's a pretty far leap, scientifically speaking. And there are some interesting things about solar minimums that are happening or appear to be happening, and we're going to talk about that in the second half of this podcast. Another thing that would be an effect from a solar minimum is, I hate to say it, really short summers. And if you follow events around the upper Midwest in the summer, you know that one of the coolest events of the entire summer is the air show at Oshkosh by EAA around mid to late July. And a lot of people that are pilots, civil aviation pilots, fly in to EAA. The pattern is crazy flying in there. I hopefully will be there this year. I know that Alpha Systems will be there. Alpha Systems makes the Revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator, which puts an AOA on your plane's cockpit dashboard so that when you are trying to figure out how much lift your wing is producing in those final turns and maneuvering in the pattern at EAA, you can look forward and see where you're going. You're not staring at the instrument panel or trying to find the AOA. So click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's Revolutionary Angle of Attack Indicator. The Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. That's why Mark Corin developed it. He is the guru at Alpha. He'll be at EAA on his feet the entire time talking to pilots about being safe. Listen for more information about where Alpha will be at the EAA air show. Before we get going, I want to, and because this is an easy talker where I just have a bunch of pieces of paper here and I don't have this thing written or organized in a fashion that really progresses, you know, logically. It's just me talking about this. I like to do stuff like this because what I'm doing is laying out the case in sort of a free association way for future podcasts, because I believe that we're going to be talking about this a lot in the coming years. So if we're going to have a solar minimum and it starts in 2020 and continues for 10 years before it starts the road back to a solar maximum, we're going to be talking a lot about colder weather. We're going to be talking a lot about minimums. And because we're aware of this, there's going to be another discussion about the magnetic field. So one of my favorite YouTube channels is a YouTube channel. I don't know who the guy is, but his YouTube channel is called Maverick Star or Maverick Star Reloaded. Now, what Maverick Star is doing is he has a number of these meters that detect the intensity of the Earth's magnetic field. One of the things that happens during solar minimums is the magnetic fields get wacky. I mentioned earlier that something that seems confusing, it's kind of like bond sales. When the prices go down, right, that's bad. When they go up, it's good. And the relationship between bond sales and stock sales is completely confusing to me. And I'm not even going to try to talk about it. It seems to me that's what this is all about. When we are at a solar maximum, the Earth's magnetic fields tend to stabilize. When we are at a solar minimum, they tend to destabilize, which is what everyone is saying. Is it true? You know, you'd have to do more research to find that out. And sometimes they just go wacky. So what does that mean? It means we could have many North Poles and many South Poles in a really significant situation. Now, the thing that Maverick Starr is doing is he is saying that the Earth's jet streams, which hold the polar vortex in check, which is this really cold sub-zero weather at the top of the Earth or at the bottom of the Earth, the magnetic fields are going crazy. And so what is starting to happen is that the jet streams are getting confused. So if this is a feature of a solar minimum, then that's part of the reason for why we're having all this crazy weather. It also means, I mean, by extension, well, what's the summer going to be like? What's the winter going to be like? What's the weather going to be like as this gets worse and worse and worse? We go back to that little ice age, which is pretty significant in world history between the late 1600s and the early 1700s, this period when it really got cold. And they call it the mini ice age. Now, I will tell you that the climatologists and the people who believe in global warming and the people who are proponents of that theory say this is a myth. Roughly every 2 years, we're treated to headlines repeating the myth that the Earth is headed for an imminent mini ice age. It happened in 2013, it happened in 2015, and just recently at the end of 2017, and it appears to be back in 2018 and 2019. Well, why? Because we are heading into this grand, I'm not going to call it a grand, we're heading into this next solar cycle, which is at its minimum. So if you're looking at it on a chart, it's a wave at the bottom of the wave. That's where we are right now as we head into this solar minimum in 2020 that I would assume will last about 10 years because they all have. I am not predicting any weather issues, but I am going to say this. It makes me wonder, especially in the midst of a long, cold, very snowy winter in the upper Midwest with these giant – we have so much snow that we don't have any place to put it anymore. Like I have to do the driveway. When I do the driveway, I have to go up and down in terms of shoveling. So I'm pushing, I'm like plowing the snow out into the street and then over to the side because I don't have any more places to put the snow. Like when I throw it over on one side, it ends up going on the steps. When I throw it on the other side, the drift is so high, I can't get it over into the yard. That's how much snow we have, and it's not warming up, so the snow's not melting. We haven't had any significant snow melt at all. And I certainly remember winters in the early 80s when they would take all the snow and pile it up in the Sears parking lot over in St. Paul. And sometimes that thing didn't melt until like late June, right? And so I remember driving over there in June on like an 80-degree day and at the very beginning of the year in the spring, and I'd be like, that giant iceberg is still there. You know, for years, they just took it in trucks and dumped it into the river. Well, they don't do that anymore. They pile it up someplace. I don't know where they pile it, but they are now going around and getting it off of the streets because people have to stick, you have to push out so far into the street to see if anybody's coming that you get hit. So all of us are doing this weird thing when we're driving, where when we come to side streets, we're driving on a main road, you know, Minnetonka, let's say, or whatever, you know, your main road is by you. Mine is Minnetonka. And so these drifts are so high that when you're driving along, you kind of ease over into the middle lane because you know somebody's going to nose out because they can't see. So you have to stick the car way out into the lane to see where the snow is. The alleys are full. Everybody's bitching about snow removal. And in the middle of the night, you hear these trucks and the beep, beep, beep of the backup of these trucks as they just dump this snow and all in the business districts, they're trying to get rid of these giant drifts, and I don't know where they take it. But we haven't had it was over 40 once. And so everybody's starting to go, you know, what if this goes on until March? Or what if this cold goes on until April, which it has. We had a huge storm last year in April that was, I mean, in some places we got 15 inches. I remember that. And we have had cold weather and snow in Minnesota in May. And it didn't – I remember the one that I experienced in May not too long ago. There wasn't a significant accumulation, but there was a lot of really depressed people. It gets depressing because you want that warmth so much. So it was funny because at my network meeting, one of our people is a travel agent and does travel, and she was saying, "Hey, I'm starting to book next Christmas, and I'm booking stuff for summer, but it's pretty much booked for the Caribbean cruises and the super warm weather." And I turned to the guy next to me, and I was like, "Well, you're basically screwed if you didn't make plans to go to Cabo or someplace like that, because you're going to pay top dollar to get the deals are gone, supposedly." So the thing about the magnetic field that I think is fascinating is the predictions that there will be a pole shift. And this is coming from Maverick Star, Suspicious Observer, and a couple of other people on YouTube.
You know, the Canadian high-intensity regional magnetic pole over the Canadian region is dissipating and has done so very rapidly over the last 7 years. And I predict we've got probably 5 to 7 years left before that intensity zeroes out. And guys, here's the thing, when it does, we're going to see some rapid movements in the magnetic pole, or at least where our compasses are pointing and our sensors at the moment.
It is all about Earth's magnetic reversal, and it is linked for you below the video in the description box. We've got your wind maps followed by shots of our star to close. We'll do this all again tomorrow, right here, but right now it's 4:05 a.m. in the new Valley of the Sun. Eyes open, no fear. Be safe, everyone.
Now, according to Maverick Star, they talked to somebody at NASA, they didn't say who, that said, yes, we're aware of this situation where the magnetic fields are getting weaker and weaker and starting to split. One part of the magnetic field is over Siberia, a weaker part is over Canada. Yes, we're watching it, but we're not going to say anything about it because we're not sure it's going to have any real deleterious effects on the planet at this point. He is saying, well, this looks like we're going to have a magnetic pole shift, which is where the North and the South Pole would flip. Now, people don't know this. I was actually surprised to read this. During solar minimums and maximums, the cycle is heralded by a pole shift on the sun. So the sun's north and south flip. So it happens more on the sun than it happens on Earth, but it has happened in the past on Earth. Did a podcast about that if you want to hear more. I think we're actually overdue for a pole flip, a magnetic pole flipped, a flip. The other thing that people are saying that you have to be aware of is that as that pole moves into Siberia, the North Pole, if it actually solidifies over there, the suggestion is that the physical tilt of the Earth would then follow, and that the Earth would literally turn on its axis. And if that happened, it would happen very quickly. And the proof of that is the mastodons in the North Pole, which are under the ice that they found with food still in their stomachs. And they theorized that this flip that occurred, or this cold, it had to have been a flip because of these mastodons were on the physical continent of Antarctica or the Arctic, then it must have been in warmer temperatures. And then when it flipped, they were killed immediately, frozen in place. And the theory is that this is what would happen again, which would actually be pretty fantastic. I don't think anyone would survive it. But then I'll just close by asking, well, okay, if volcanic activity is associated with solar minimums or maximums, if earthquake activity, you know, earth movements, you know, the tectonic, you know, plates moving is associated with this, and this has to do with the magnetosphere and the magneto, which is the Earth. The Earth is a giant magneto, and the magnetism's effect on the core of the planet. If that increases, does that mean that we have more volcanic activity and therefore colder? These are all important questions to ponder in the midst of of a really cold winter with a lot of snow, with the prayer that, yes, if it's going to flip, please take us to the equator and not the other way, because I really don't want to go to the Arctic. And then one final thing, the one final thought would be, I was also really interested in the fact that during solar minimums, you see aurora borealis increase. If you live in northern Minnesota, if you live in the Upper Peninsula, if you live in Finland or Norway, aurora borealis, the northern lights, are very visible, and they are magical. Magical. I was telling somebody that when I was a kid, I was riding around in a car one evening in Chicago with John Lapine, my friend, and we were driving, and I noticed that there was this cloud that – it was a clear fall evening, and there was this cloud that – so the sun – it was October, so the sun was kind of going down. It must have been around sundown, and I thought it was the sun, and there was this orange cloud, and it was beautiful and really different than what a cloud normally looked like. And we're driving along. We went under an underpass. We came out the underpass, and that orange cloud turned green. And John Lapine freaked out. He thought it was the end of the world. He goes, "What is that?" And had never seen anything like that. And I said, "John, that's the Northern Lights." I don't know how I knew it was the Northern Lights, but it was a sheet of green and orange, and it kept changing color, and it was amazing. And you could feel it. Your hair kind of stands up on the back of your neck. It's really one of the true wonders. It's magnetized ice crystals in the sky, and it looks like sheets, and it's just amazing. It's really amazing. And if we have a solar minimum, they say that the effects of the aurora borealis is increased, I would imagine, because the magnetic fields of the sun are increased, because the magnetism of the sun kind of – the magnetic field kind of drops into the center of the sun during one of these solar minimums. So, you know, if we have all of these different things, what's the effect going to be on the aurora borealis? Finally – this is another thing I learned, which I'm still kind of confused about. But, you know, the sun and Earth are literally – and I hate to use the word literally because it's overused this in this time period by people colloquially speaking. But we are literally connected to the sun. There is a hard connection, like one of those audio jacks that connects the Earth – energy to the sun energy. Cosmic rays are increased and more of them reach the Earth, and solar wind can have a very strong effect. And so I would just simply close this by asking, is the climate stuff that people are pointing to climate change as the and essentially global warming as the cause of related to the sun? I personally have believed that for years. Maybe I'm crazy. The second thing is, what are the effects on economy and the effects on society and people? You know, if – and we know this, that the moon cycles have an effect on people. It has – there's plenty of data which show increases in hospital visits and insomnia during full moon periods, and then the reverse during, you know, the dark phase of the moon. If the moon does that, what does the sun do? And the sun, a much larger and more important celestial being than the moon, a celestial object, what are the effects on humanity during a solar minimum? And then what are the effects on humanity during a really significant grand solar minimum, which we are overdue for? So let's just hope that it warms up. One more thing. I hate winter. We have to live through it, so you have to hunker down and you have to forget about it. But I also hate my printer because why? I hate paying for those print cartridges at those big box retailers because they're so expensive. Cartridge World in Maple Grove can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. Click on that fabulous Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. They can do free delivery on qualifying orders. They are off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway in Maple Grove. You can call Jason at 763-420-6632. That's 763-420-6632, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. I'll tell you a secret. Cartridge World can deliver, you know, or send cartridges to you, whether you're hearing this podcast in Montana or Richmond or San Francisco as well. So check them out online at Cartridge World by clicking on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. So there it is. I'm sure I'm going to be doing more podcasts about this, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes. Tune in, blogtalkradio.com. We are on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher.com. I appreciate the likes and the shares. I really appreciate the shares. Occasionally, people comment on posts without listening, and it's really important to me that if you're going to share or like a post, that you actually listen to the podcast if you're seeing it on Facebook. Obviously, I have a lot of subscribers. A lot of people listen to it off the page, the BobDavisPodcast.com, but the shares really help me get into your world on Facebook. So share it and click on the podcast and listen and let me know what you think at BobDavisPodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 810, the Bob Davis Podcast, the Grand Solar Minimum, the impending doom of a frozen hell.
So long, run with the feeling of being alive.